This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down. Roger that.
Welcome to Trapping Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. Got family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel. I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my trip till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trapping Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trapping Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do Trap Supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got. Wildlife Control Supplies, proven solutions for wildlife control, delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're in the ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company. Have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you. Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it, fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light, sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to deer camp. Shotgun toter, Republican voter. Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA. Cause this is what I say. I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't.
Well, hey there, folks, and welcome to Trapping Across America. My name is Chip Davis, and I'm going to be sitting in with you again tonight as guest host of Trapping Radio, the original trapping podcast out there. And it is my pleasure to be sitting in with you tonight, as always, when I get a chance to fill in for Clint. Clint is actually at the Herkimer, New York show as we speak. I just talked to him a few moments ago, and he's setting up. Looks like the Herkimer show is going to be great again, as usual. That's one that I have never made, but I always wanted to. And one of these years, maybe next year, I'll have opportunity to ride up there and visit with the fine folks up there and the trappers at that show. I know this is one of the particular shows that has almost a legend type of quality to it. Folks talk about that Herkimer show all the time. So if you're in that area or anywhere in the Northeast within driving distance, do yourself a favor and get out there and see Clint and the rest of the sponsors. I know several of the Trapper Radio sponsors will be there set up at the show. I've talked to several of them over the last several days personally that were either en route or had plans to be there. So do yourself a favor, guys. There'll be a great demo list going on there. There'll be lots of vendors. There'll be lots of trappers. There'll be stories swapped back and forth, and it'll be a great, great time. You'll learn a lot, I'm sure. There'll be trapping seasons just right around the corner. If you're like me, you probably need to pick up a few or a whole lot of items. Never a bad thing when you have to buy trapping supplies. So that's going on. Speaking of our sponsors, I've actually been trying to get Clint to maybe re-record the first intro part. I'm partial to the original Trapper Radio intro. I play it when I host the shows. But since that original intro was recorded, we have added a couple of new sponsors. So I just want to take just a second and make sure that we plug those guys. Jeff Dunlap from Dunlap Lures, the death dealer himself, is a new sponsor. I say new, not so new anymore, but he has come along since that original recording was done that you just heard, as well as Alan Sayer up at Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. Alan also sponsors The Rant that typically airs on Thursday evenings, except for sometime during show season. You'll notice that this week, I think Clint actually aired. And did I say Rant again? That's what it used to be called. Now it's called Man Strong Podcast. That podcast has taken a slightly different approach or a different topic on. And if you've not been following along, you may want to catch that as well. Not so much trapping as much as it is. Well, just listen for yourself. You'll be thoroughly intrigued. I think I've listened to every one of them, and it too is great content that Clint puts out. So, Alan, thanks a bunch, bud, for supporting that one, and we welcome both you guys as well as we do the rest of the sponsors. We could not do Trapping Radio if it was not for this list of sponsors that you just heard mentioned and these names. They're the guys that pay the bills around here. Folks, it's crazy what this podcast costs to produce. It's amazing that we're still able to bring it to you 100% free every Friday night. The value there is just untold. I've learned so much about trapping and about any species out there. And if you want to search the archives, guys, sometimes I kind of like to plug this because sometimes I don't think we mention it enough. If you scroll down to the very, very bottom of the show, if you came on here through trappingradio2.com, which I'm sure most people did, you can scroll all the way to the bottom of that site and you'll see archives listed there. Then you can search the archives by year and by month. So in other words, if you were interested in something that came out in December of 2016, you can search it. But what if you say, I don't know when it came out? Then you could search for, say, just to use an example, Trapping Radio Bobcat Trapping. You would have a numerous list, if that's what you were interested in, or Trapping Radio Raccoon, or Trapping Radio Coyote, or Beaver, or you name whatever. You can search it, and that would be a Google search, and most of the time, you will get really, really close. Guys, we're well over 300 episodes. We're actually pushing on the 400 mark. We're not quite there yet, and that is, each episode's at least an hour, typically. Some of them very, very minutely shorter than that. So there's a wealth of knowledge on Trapping Radio. That's a couple of easy ways that you can search the archives and find what you're looking for. And for that to be free is absolutely incredible. The only way it is because of those sponsors and their donations to you guys, the trappers, because they want you to have this knowledge too. So support those guys. Show them a little love back. They're paying the bill, so you can hear this for free. As you're needing supplies and traps and lure and equipment, give these guys a shout. They're all great guys. I know every one of these sponsors personally, hang out with them at shows, and they've all become super, super good friends of mine, every single last one of them. They're great guys and a great bunch of folks to deal with. So you'll definitely want to check those guys out. Well, moving forward, I will tell you this, and it is still hot. This is the end of August in Mississippi. So I'm going to stop periodically here and get a swig of this ice cold water. And we will get on track here. I was a little bit on this particular show, a last minute kind of thing. Clint had texted me or called me or something back several days ago and said, "Hey, I'm going to New York this week and got a show up there this weekend. Is there any way you could cover tonight's show?" I said, "Sure, I'll be glad to. I love hanging out with the guys, and this will be an honor to do." And I remember thinking about the time I hung the telephone up. I said, "You know, I'm not real sure what I will record on or what I'll even talk about." And this week has been crazy busy, guys. I've had a lot going on. Many of you know, besides trapping, I'm the guy that my son and I own Expand-A-Pan. That business is blowing up. There's a lot of guys that are outfitting their traps with our products. We thank you very, very much for your continued support there. That business is growing leaps and bounds and just almost exponentially. Seems like as guys try these big pans, they fall in love with them and they order more. And that train is absolutely rolling and we appreciate it. So that's kept me busy, as well as I recently finished up something I've been wanting to do for a long time. I attended Nashville Auction School and I became a several steps in that process. But I went to school here recently, came back, I set for a state exam, took a big nasty test, and I am officially a licensed auctioneer in my state. And so I had a lot of things going on there and lots of practice and lots of different paperwork to get there. That's been crazy. I also have a little construction business and that thing is blowing up. We've been so terribly wet throughout the whole entire summer that we finally had a chance to go to work and get this equipment rolling. So that's blowing up and other sideline things that are not even worthy of mentioning. But long story short, Trapping Radio was a little bit out of my mind from the last time that Clint and I spoke about it until today. And so I said, "You know what? When I did think about it, I said, I better grab a topic here pretty quick." And I thought about several things I could talk about because it just seems like it comes easy when I get to hang out with guys like you all that are listening, just the greatest people in the country, and I always like to do that. But I kind of thought back, and one that I had a couple of different requests on is trapline dogs. And so I'll give you a little bit of brief history. Let me preface the whole entire show saying this very, very likely may be a little shorter kind of show than typical or shorter than usual because this is one of those that I'm totally not prepared for. I know the subject matter relatively well. I've trained a trapline dog and I've got one that I love to death. She's my best friend and we spend a lot of hours on the trapline and in the upland woods in the fall and winter and early spring months. So I think I can talk about that pretty much off the top of my head. But yeah, I want to warn you that we may be a little bit on the short side because I am slightly unprepared for this show. So the history, we do make Expand-A-Pans and we used to make a product that we called the Ugly Drag. It was primarily a coyote drag. That's what I still use today. I'm a huge drag guy. The drag thing came from an episode I had several years ago. I was on a line like I love to set. I don't get an opportunity to set the big lines like I like to, but at this particular time I had 175 or 200 traps out. And was going pretty strong. I actually had about half that many in two different lines, and so I would alternate those, and I would set and tend. I'd run them all because we were a 24-hour check law where we were at the time. That's changed slightly in my state, but at the time we were 24 hours, so I would alternate and run them all one day. But in other words, I would run mornings on half the line and afternoons on the other, and I would only pull animals you know, depending on which day I was running. In other words, say line A got all the attention today, I would pull animals and reset and rebate and relure if needed, while line B just got animals pulled. And then I would reverse that. And it seemed like that really added to my catch when I had an opportunity to run almost pseudo duplicate lines like that. And so that helped. What really happened, though, is that particular year, and this has only been a few years ago, I developed tendonitis in my elbow, which the doc actually explained to me is the same thing that they call tennis elbow. It's an inflammation of your tendons there caused by repetitive motion, which is swinging the hammer. And before that time, I had a few drags, but I was probably staking 95% of my traps through earth anchors. Like the earth anchors, and still a big fan of them, but that hammer and I just did not get along. So he put me on a few meds, just anti-inflammatory stuff, and said, "Hey, the only thing that's going to fix this is rest." And he said, "What have you been doing repetitively?" And I told him, "I'm a trapper. You know, I swing a hammer to stake my traps," and that's where he asked me, you know, typically how many swings does it take and how many you're setting. And when I told him I'm setting 40, 50 traps a day, pretty much every day, he said, "That's it." He said, "You don't have to go any further. I know exactly what's the issue with your elbow, and you're going to have to stop swinging that hammer." And I said, "You know, I'm not going to stop this trapping, not even to let this elbow get well. That's not in my blood. That's not in the cards. It's not going to happen." And I already had a few drags, and so I went to drags almost exclusively now. So I've changed from being 95% stakes and 5% drags to completely opposite of that. Anymore, my trapping looks like 95% drags and 5% stakes. While we're on the drags, I'll kind of cover that topic too and tell you what the 5% is. There are a very, very few occasions with a good quality drag that you still probably need to look for another option, like a stake or cable off to a solid structure or something. And that's dead grass. That's tall dead grass. I've not seen any drag, including mine, that would stand up to. So let me just explain what we've got, because different people in different parts of the country, this can have different meanings. Here, what we in the South, the Deep South, we have what we call sagebrush or sage grass, which is totally different than where I've been. I think there's an actual plant called sage out west. I was in Nevada and Utah earlier this year, and they had the actual sage. This looks nothing like it. This is just a brown grass, little bitty, maybe a 16th of an inch in diameter, and it grows up about waist tall. Seldom gets any taller than that. And in the wintertime, it'll get extremely brittle. You can just walk through there and you break this stuff off in segments, about a foot or 18 inches long, just walking through, not even trying to break this off. That's what we call down here sage grass. It's not true blue sage, or I think they call it big leaf sage or something. I may be wrong on that. Something along those lines that's out west. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is southern, I don't know the scientific name, guys, but it's what we call southern sage grass. And other big, tall grasses like that, you see them more in CRP type ground that's not had trees established on it. You see a lot of that. So what happens there, and I can tell you this from experience with drags, is when the animal gets caught and he stretches your chain out and he starts dragging off with the drag, for the first several feet, the first 20 to 30 feet, you're fine. You can see exactly which direction he left there. You can see the broken grass. What happens after that, the grass starts breaking off in those longer lengths, those 12, 18, 20 inch lengths, and it starts getting compacted in the teeth of your drags. Okay. If you have any type of live vegetation with any type of root material, any type of shrubbery, grass, crop stalks, anything like that with substantial roots that don't just shatter, then it's no problem. I love drags in those situations. The one and only time I don't use them is when I'm in sage grass like that, because I will basically ball up within, you know, say twice that first length. So if it took 15, 20 feet to kind of get that grass broken and start catching in the in the teeth of your drag, then about that distance more, you have enough collected that you have no teeth. You're basically pulling what almost resembles a beach ball at that time. And the animal has, the drag has nothing to bite on. The animal can continue on. Now, are you going to lose that animal? You're not. Typically, he's going to get to something somewhere, sometime, whether that be a tree line or a ditch bank or a little bit different terrain. And as soon as he can get to something that, you know, that's not continually adding to that grass ball, then the grass starts, you know, eventually coming out. Bam, the teeth bite in, he wraps up. The issue is, where I saw it, in the Delta country of Mississippi, where I really kind of got my education on this, a lot of our fields will be, you know, 1,200, 1,500, some of them 2,000 acres in one field. So, you know, that could be a mile and a half in that direction before he gets to the next tree line, you know, or a quarter mile back this way. And which way did he go? I know which way his first 12, 15, 20 feet were, because I can see that direction, but he could easily after that circle back. The issue is when you grow this beach ball on your drag, then it's just basically riding over the top of the crop, and it's not leaving you any direction there. So you basically got to walk that perimeter. I've never lost a coyote. I'm a coyote guy. You can put drags on coons or beaver or fox or anything else, but I typically refer to the coyote world because that's what I do. And I've never lost a coyote on a drag. I have had to look for them for a couple of days sometimes. I couldn't find them the first day and walked half of the field perimeter, came back the second day, walked the second half of the field perimeter, and actually found the coyote. But so I got to thinking, so, you know, these are the very, very few situations and circumstances that the coyote gets very far away on these ugly drags that I was running. I'm going to quickly run down a little rabbit trail or something. I get lots and lots and lots of requests for the ugly drags, and we are not making them anymore. About a year or a little better ago, President Trump had some rhetoric about we were upside down on our imports, especially steel. We were importing much, much more than we were exporting, and there was some talk about some steel import tariffs. And when that talk came out, the thicker irons, the thicker steels that we use for our products, especially those ugly drags that we were making, skyrocketed. The thinner type materials like we use for expander pans, they went up as well, but they didn't cost as much as the quarter inch steel that we were building those drags out of. And I got to figuring my time, and you know, when you figure a quadruple increase on the steel price, we were just priced out of them, guys. I love making them. I love using them. They're a great product. I think the world of them. Maybe one day as the steel will continue to inch down in price, and maybe I can go back. But basically what I was doing, I was working all day long. I think I could produce about 10 dozen of those things through the course that it took, which is actually a two-day process to do that, when you figure all the welding and everything that went in there. And I profited about $8.20 per day for 2 days worth of work. So it just didn't, we got priced out. Our input costs priced us out. I didn't want to go up on the trappers and, cause they were already, I thought, probably pricey enough, but they are a great product. There are still some good drags on the market. What I push people to, F&T has a great drag. They call it Sabretooth. It's super. It does a great job. So does JC Connor. He's got a couple of different drags depending on what you're looking for. I really liked our ugly drag. Ours had 6 teeth on them, where most of the other drags on the market only have 2. It was a good drag, but we're not making those anymore. So maybe that kind of will address some of those questions. And please don't bombard me and say, hey, please make me just 1 dozen ugly drags. Because I've had lots of people do that. And if we have an opportunity to come back in the market with those, we will. All this, I'm getting closer and closer and closer to talking about dogs and trapping. After walking those couple of days all the way around those huge Delta fields, I said, you know, there's got to be another way. I had been around a couple of other trappers, some mentors of mine, some guys I've actually even interviewed for this radio show, David Gore is one that comes to mind. Mississippi guy has forgotten more about a Cody than I'll probably ever know. Super, super good, great guy. And he runs a trapline dog. And so I was quizzing him about his trapline dogs quite a bit. I come from a dog background too. I raised championship Labrador retrievers that we did competitions with and also duck hunted with for years. Most of my adult life, I raised and trained labs. Once I kind of got out of the duck hunting and the guiding and that sort of thing, I shifted gears. I grew up, my early days, my childhood, I grew up quail hunting, and I absolutely fell in love with a bird dog then. My one of the greatest pleasures I have in life is watching a bird dog, what I call switch ends. That's what we used to call it down south, where they're basically wide open running. They smell the scent of that quail or that covey of quail. And before he can stop, his inertia absolutely turns him 180 degrees and he doesn't flinch a muscle until you walk back up there. That this is dog training in its purest form, and you don't have many of those in a lifetime, typically one. And so that's kind of, I've kind of always been a dog man. I've always, you know, we deer hunt with dogs. I don't have deer dogs, but we certainly used the labs and the duck hunting a long time, and I grew up with the bird dogs. So got a little older, I changed locations. We moved a couple of years ago and more of upland country now, and I really wanted to get back into the quail hunting and the quail dogs. And did that for, you know, several years growing up, and I kind of got back into it briefly about 10, 12 years ago, and actually guided for several years, and we were back on tame birds now because our wild quail population is just about gone. Very, very few wild quail down south anymore, almost non-existent, to the point that I won't even hardly shoot into a covey, but maybe once a year, that's it, because there's so very few coveys left down here. We try to play the conservation game with those. And speaking of which, another quick rabbit trail is, that's where I target my nest predation. I'm typically a coyote guy, but when I have opportunity, especially I get to those places, I know it's some birds. Even if I'm running the coyote line there, I will always fill in with some nest predators, some, you know, coons, raccoons, skunks, possums, that sort of thing. I'll try to clean those nest predators up when I'm there, where I'm at a place that I know has them. And, you know, you've heard me get on this radio show and preach about running a single species line versus a multi-species line and, you know, the good, bad, and ugly of all of that and both of those. But still, when you have a purpose, never divert from that purpose. Even though I like to run a straight coyote line most of the time, when you get to those opportunities and you're there and you're on that acreage and you can help yourself by taking out some nest predators and helping those quail get along, it could be turkeys, you can fill in the blank of what's important to you, but never miss those opportunities. You're going to be there anyway. And so, you know, how much extra time does it take to put, you know, a couple of dozen DPs out, or if you're, you know, if your law will let you some 220s or some snares or whatever the case may be. So, long story short, I've always liked that. And I was looking to get another dog. As far as species of dog, mine was pretty much directed toward me and what I run. I run a German short-haired pointer. That's what I run on my trap line. The only reason I run a short hair is because I wanted to get into the upland game too. I wanted another pointer. I wanted another bird dog. So I said, well, I'm going to dual purpose this dog. And this is not just a whimsical decision. I thought about this for well over a year. I researched different breeds. On the bird dogs, I've always been a English pointer guy. But something struck my eye by those German Shorthairs, and I really had an appreciation for them. They're beautiful dogs. They're very, very versatile. There's a lot of guys that use them for lots of different things, everything from trailing wounded deer to obviously bird hunting and pointing to pheasants, retrievers. There's a lot of those dogs being utilized as retrievers. They're just straight out companion dogs. They're just great all around dogs, great personalities, lots of drive. Drive was important for me. And as well, you know, I'm gonna boil mine down. I'll explain a lot about my short hair as we get on in the show, but the number one factor was dual purpose. I wanted to split that time between trapping and between the quail. So that's the reason that I chose the short hair. Other breeds, I want to cover that real quick. Mr. David that I mentioned earlier that runs a coyote dog. There's a couple of other guys in our state association that also run trapline dogs. They run a lot of blue heelers. That seems to be a real common breed that you see down here. I know in different parts of the country, when you get up in the east, there's a lot of curs, a lot of mountain curs that are run, yellow mouse, different breeds there. The commonality of most of those, and I've even heard of a handful of people, maybe one guy, that's actually running a bulldog. And this is not, the other breed's not the bulldog, but the rest of them, the similarities are they're all a relatively compact built dog. Clint Locklear and I, as you well know, are really, really good friends. He had one of the best trapline dogs I've ever heard about, Daisy, his Daisy dog. I never had an opportunity to meet Daisy. Daisy passed away not long before Clint and I really got to be great friends, but I've heard tons and tons of stories, and she was a stray. She was a dog that Clint picked up on trapline one day, and she became one of the most renowned trapline dogs, I guess, out there. And she was no breeding, but it does take an intelligent dog. Daisy, as well as these other breeds that I talked about, are somewhat compact built. I don't think you want a little bitty, you know, teacup type size dog, just from the dangers on the trapline. You also, I would typically suggest shying away from your great big dogs, your German Shepherds and larger, and not to say that if you got a German Shepherd and you're using on the trap line, more power to you, that's great. But the reasoning behind not going with the larger breeds would just be the transportation and the mobility. I spoke a minute ago about the dangers of there. Your dog's going to step in a trap. If you're trapping and you've got any kind of decent sized line from a dozen or better traps, they're anywhere remotely close in proximity, you're on a trail, your dog's going to find one of those traps. I want to make sure I cover this topic because it was on my brain before I started. It's not as big of an issue to me and a lot of the guys that I may mention in this podcast, because down here what I typically do is live market coyote trap. Why is that different than if you're in, say, Wisconsin and you're fur trapping? My equipment choice, I can't have cuts on these coats. I choose equipment that is very, very gentle on that coat. It's not necessary to be that gentle. And I hate to use that. It's a very poor term, gentle, because that sounds like anything else is harsh. That's not the case. All the equipment that we have, the modern equipment that we're using today in trapping, is absolutely humane and absolutely fine. That risk of injury is ever so slightly more on your traditional non-modified traps. What we use for our live market coyote is specifically designed not to have any single cuts whatsoever. Our cuts are typically abrasions. They're not cuts. We never see broken bones. We just next to zero, that sort of thing. We use really, really wide face jaws that can be accomplished several different ways, through laminations or through cast jaws or through whatever. And this is not a discussion on the best trap by any stretch, but there's just a lot of things to think about. Some things that take me too long or to be off topic to go into, but our equipment choice is a little easier on the coats by choice, which is also easier on your dog when your dog gets caught. I think it's important for that dog to not like the trap and associate that trap with something that's unpleasant, because that's exactly what is associated with our animals. It's not a pain thing. You guys that trap, what is your, if you're not loud when you approach the animal, I don't care if you're raccoon trapping or coyote trapping or anything in between, typically that animal's curled up and gone to sleep. He's not in pain, he's not in distress, he's not in anything like that. He's inconvenienced, he's got some handcuffs on him. That usually transpires in the first 30 to 45 seconds that he's restrained is when that happens. When, you know, the dog, the coyote can't get out, he can't get up, what in the world is going on? He fights it and jumps around for a few seconds, maybe a minute. After that, he can't get out, he can't go anywhere, might as well take a nap. You know, and that's what he does. So what I'm capitalizing on my trap line dog when I do catch one, and I don't intentionally set the trap, I don't set her up for it, but I don't prevent her for it either. And I want that distress level. As soon as she gets to the point that she starts settling down, then I want to remove her from the trap right there. So early on, the training stages, you want to be very, very quick to, not so super quick that you don't. So what I'm getting at here, let's use an analogy. Let's just use, what could we use? Some kind of disciplinary action. Say the dog's jumping up on you all the time. Say we're dealing with a little puppy. You know, you want to make it somewhat uncomfortable for that dog to jump on you if that's what you're trying to teach it. So you need some kind of correction mechanism. A lot of times the dog's head just happens to hit the back of my hand. I'm not sure how that happens, but bam. Oh, you're on the ground. I'm sorry, sweetie. You know, did your head just hit the back of my hand? Don't jump on me and that won't happen. You know, and it takes 4, 5, or 6 of those times. And then all of a sudden, you know, the dog remembers, hey, I don't want my head to hit the back of his hand again. So the dog stops jumping on me. It's just repetition. That's all it is in dog training. Certain things are more repetition and certain things are not. To get your dog to avoid the traps, I've never had to really teach that except for the point I allow them to be uncomfortable in that trap, which is really more of a shock feature. It's between their ears. It's not what's clamped around their foot. It's a this is a mental thing. I can't go anywhere. I want to go there. I can't go. I'm stuck. I'm in a trap. When they start accepting that, that's when I want to let them out. You know, and you'll catch a dog. I think I caught Trudy 3 times, maybe. Really close to 4, and I called her away from it the other time. And that's kind of a tough thing. It's a tough thing. You know where the trap is. You know where the dog is. You know it's about to happen. And it's kind of tough not to call the dog off because hopefully you care a little something about your dog when you start this. So when you it's kind of a hard thing to watch, to be honest with you, but you just do it for the good of the dog. And you know you're there. You know she's not going to get hurt, or he. I happen to run almost all female dogs, so I will be referring to the dogs as she's. But at any rate, that's the point there, is let them stay in the trap long enough to fight it. When they quit fighting it, that's the point in time that it's okay to take them out. Be prepared for this to happen 2 or 3 times. You know, the next thing is... So I've been talking about, I'm trying to kind of sew a couple of these kind of wild ideas together to make a couple of finer points out of them. I talked about drag dogs, and that's what I really want to focus on first. And then I want to come back to, there's a couple of other benefits that a trap line dog can really, really give to you, and some that I kind of stumbled on. I started this wanting a dog that would track my coats because I was putting everything on drags. I want to go see that trap is gone. This would open up that 5% that I don't use drags because of grass issues. Now I'm not worried about that. I can turn the dog loose. The dogs typically found the coyote before I can even get out of the truck and gather up my catch pole. When I let the dog out, she is Johnny on the spot. And so that's where my goal was, is to make a drag dog out of her. I'm going to stop for some water. And that's what we did. And we made a drag dog out of her. And I would put her against most out there to find this coyote on the drags. A couple of things about that that I've had questions on, or I've thought through the process, or I've asked different dog trainers with many, many, many more years of experience with me, is when I'll literally walk her up to this site on heel, and I'll regress here in a second. I'll tell you how I introduced this to younger pups, and how I started that. And while I say younger pups, I would not advise starting. I'd wait till the dog is physically mature, not necessarily mentally mature, but you want to wait till you're 8 or 10 months old, where the dog is 80-85% of its grown size before you want to start this, just because when you got little bitty puppies, I would not start a trap line dog as far as on the trap line itself at, say, 8-9 weeks old, where you're going to start a lot of your obedience training and that sort of thing, just because the dog is not a physical size and stature to hold up to what they're going to be facing. You're not losing any time there. If you'll delay until 6 or 8, 10 months, you're fine as far as your time. The dog will still be able to learn and do fine. So don't start them too terribly early. What I did when I actually started was I would have a catch and I would walk her up there, and I staked quite a few to start with. I wanted to see the coyote in the trap. I wanted her to understand this is our prey, this is what we were doing. So the first couple of times she saw a coyote, it was in a staked trap. And a lot of times you can encourage a bark right there. A lot of times they'll get vocal when you see this coyote. Some dogs I've seen will get pretty aggressive with the coyotes. Some are pretty much laid back. They'll stay outside the catch circle, bark circle. An advantage you have, regardless if you're going to dispatch or you're going to take this coyote live like we do, then a lot of times the coyote's focus is on the dog and not necessarily on you. So, you know, our process for removing coyotes out of a trap involves a catch pole. And when I've got that coyote focused on that dog, it's a lot easier to me to manipulate my catch pole and get that noose around the coyote's head and neck and gently lay it down on the ground where I can get it removed from the trap and then pick up and put it in my holding box. That sequence works really, really well with the dog because the animal's focus is more on the dog than it is on me. So that's one benefit. The next things that I did as I was introducing that, I was setting drags in some pretty tight cover, pretty heavy cover, where I knew that coyote was not going to get 10 yards, 15 yards maybe from the trap placement site. And I made sure that I took Trudy with me. My short hair's name is Trudy, named after the Charlie Daniels song Trudy, and which is very, very worthy of here. Maybe I'll even play that at the end of the show. So at any rate, that's where she got her name from. So I started running her on these little short drags. So I would walk her up. My favorite was where the coyote was out of sight, but I knew he had to be right there close because the cover was so thick. I knew that drag was going to bite in, and it may only be 15, 20 yards. And that time I was a little bit more vocal with Trudy, walking her up to where the trap was and the trap bed, and she started using her nose. And at that point, that's where the trailing comes in. They already know what the coyote smells like because I introduced them to one in a stake trap. I progressed that she smells the catch circle. She knows it's not even a catch circle at this point, but she smells that the coyote has been there. She knows there's a coyote in the area. Their noses are 10,000 times better than ours are anyway. I want to go into the scent real quick because this is something I started saying a second ago. I'm a firm believer that that dog on that trail knows the individual animal that, or at least that individual animal scent as it's working this trail. I'm a believer in this. I've had numerous times that a lot of my trapping is in some sandier type of environments. I know that there were two coyotes approached. I know that drag marks went north and the second coyote went south once the first one was caught. I've never had my dog try to trail the second coyote. I know it happened. I can read the sign. I'm looking on the ground. When I walk her up to, and I usually walk right up to where my foot is in the trap bed, I'll let her sniff just a time or two, and I'll tap her on her ear, which is my signal to her to track and to go. And I'll usually say something like, track him up or find him. It's just, I never planned that. It's just whatever came out of my mouth, and I use the same command words as I tap her on the ear, and she goes to work. She's standing where that coyote was standing when he got caught, and this is really something that's amazing. This is why I believe that each coyote may have a slightly different odor or smell to them, because my dog is always, she's never crossed paths or anything. I think that she stays on that particular coyote's trail whole entire time. Could she ever get off? Yeah, sure. I'm sure she could. But I've had lots of friends over the years that are into the wounded deer tracking, and they have some really, really neat theories about that too. The glands in, not the tarsal gland, but the gland in the foot, petty gland, podiatry gland, something. They've got a name. I'm not recalling it right now. But the theory is that each individual white-tailed deer is slightly different, and once they associate this is the deer that they're hunting from, also have blood trails or whatever else the case may be, that it's much easier for, you know, you may have 50 different deer cross the same trail you're trying to track that wounded deer on, and it's just amazing that the dog can stay on that same particular trail and follow the same exact deer. The only reason that makes logical sense to me for that happening is because the dog associates that individual smell that they're smelling. So that's what I've seen in my training with my short hair on my trap line as far as making a drag dog. And it's really, really cool. Now, I will tell you this, because I had started my upland training with Trudy before I started a lot of the other trap line training. The first 20 or 30 coyotes, and still to this day, a lot of times what she'll do is when she finds that coyote, she'll point him. She will literally stand still, raise her tail, raise one of her front legs, and lock up still. Now, I encourage the bark when I get there, especially when I get in close and I'm about to put a head catcher on and catch the coyote and take him back and into the truck. Then I encourage her to bark, and you know, and I will just kind of be animated out there. Good girl, this, you know, had a girl, talk to him, tell him, you know, and I'll encourage her to bark, and I don't want her barking when she points birds, and it's kind of hard sometimes you just kind of have a little talk with them, say, today we're quail hunting, you know, tomorrow we're going to be tracking coyotes. So it's kind of interesting that how that all happens, but they perceive and they learn that. Honestly believe that the dogs know what you're trying to do when you're trying to do with them. So that's the tracking part. A couple of other really, really important parts that I really enjoy having the dog on the trap line. One is simply, if no other reason, is companionship. These trap lines, guys, many of you shake your head yes with me when I can say that these trap lines can get long sometimes, especially when you get up there with some real numbers of steel in the ground or snares hung. There is some, it's a caution I want to come back to. I'll make myself a note about snares, and I'll come back to that. But when you get a lot of equipment out, the days get long, and just the pure companionship of having that dog there. And if you've never really hung out with a dog, and most everybody's got dogs, pets, or whatever, and they'll play with them for 30, 45 minutes, a couple of hours sometimes, or whatever, you know, if it's really just been you and that dog all day long, and it's only two of you, it becomes a completely different relationship. The dog, I understand they can't talk. I know they're not people. I get that. I understand they're an animal. But there's an association that almost becomes on a level that is emotionally intimate. That dog knows you. That dog knows if you're great, if you're happy. That dog knows if you're in any sort of distress. There's a relationship that you absolutely, I think that I relate to my dog as well as my dog relates to me. I know I can just tell by her nature if she doesn't feel good, if she's got something wrong with her. I mean, she's sick, if she got something, you know, in one of her pads, whatever's going on. I can just, because I spent so much time with my dog, I can just tell that, and I can just know that. And it's one of those things that's hard to put into words. But you'll notice it if you ever do this and you ever spend that much time with them. And just, you know, if it's nothing more than just, you know, just the pure companionship. You know, I talk to Trudy just like she's a human sometimes. And I completely, totally understand she's not. She is she's got a purpose that she serves for me. One of those is the companionship. And sometimes she talks back to me, and sometimes she does not. Sometimes she tells me things I don't want to hear. So obviously I'm exaggerating that a little bit, but they are a really cool companion. And it draws me to the third thing that I found so incredibly beneficial for running a trap line dog. I never realized this benefit before, of how much that dog sees with its nose. And I said that the way I meant to, what the dog sees, and what do I sees, I mean perceives. What the dog knows is going on in nature that I can't see and I can't smell because of that dog's olfactory senses. They see a completely different picture in their mind because of the smells and how they use their nose. That's something that you and I as trappers cannot see, and because we can't smell that well, and we can't tell that a white-tailed deer peed right there on that trail 3 hours ago. I fully believe that that dog may not be able to tell time, but they know sometime recently a white-tailed deer peed on that particular clump of grass on that particular deer trail. What's interesting is the more and more and more coyote work that Trudy got from the trailing, and as I was trying to introduce her to finding the coyotes, then the more and more and more times she would stop and remark or stop and sniff or stop and circle coyote sign. To start with, it was every smell she in the woods. She was just because she is so inquisitive and she's a smart dog, and she's kind of built for that from the bird thing to use her nose. But the more that I ran her on the trap line, it seemed like the more she became in tune and showed me where coyote sign was. And I have caught scores more coyotes, I believe, because I've had her, because it's locations and micro locations that I would have never picked out. Where I live now in my part of the state is not as much ag ground, much more timber ground, and therefore you don't see the visual track sign as much or as easily. You can't see the scat as quickly as easily. I used to be in bare ground crop fields. Most of it was tilled each year. Had a lot of sand content to there. Now I'm on woods roads and timber or pasture ground as my open fields with grass in it. It's much harder to see coyote tracks, much harder to see scat, because it just kind of gets blended in with the grass and the terrain around you. And I've noticed if I'm setting, then I always run Trudy in front of me. And it takes a little bit of extra time, and I want to explain that when I finish up what I'm trying to say. And I'll incorporate the snare caution there as well. But when I'm setting, I always run her free, open, out in front of me, and I'm paying attention much more to my dog than I am what knowledge I have built over the years of what to look for locations. In other words, if I've got an intersecting two-track, a big plus sign on the ground, if you looked at it from overhead map, typically, historically, that's somewhere I'm going to look for sign, because I have found a lot of that proves to be a great coyote location. That I'm going to stop and I'm going to look, I'm going to get out of the truck, or unless it's somewhere I can roll and hang my head out the window and look, and I'm going to verify there's coyote sign here, there's scat, this is a great place for a trap, or hey, there's no sign right here, I'm going to continue going, I'm going to look for the next location. What I find myself doing now, because I have so much faith and so much trust in Trudy and her nose, I'll just watch her much more so than I'm looking for. Is that another intersection way over there? I may need to go. I know. I'm watching my dog. One thing that helps, because she is a bird dog, she covers a lot of ground really, really quickly. That kind of goes back to the statue of the dog that I was talking about and the energy level with. But she absolutely pinpoints locations for me on the trap line. When I have an opportunity to run her while I'm sitting, my traps will be in much, much better locations. Not every single time does she mark, when I say mark, squats and peas, because she's a female, the exact trap location. But what she does do many, many times, it'll stop and circle it, smell it two or three times. I remember this past November, I believe it was, we were putting on a Trappers College, which is our youth education event in our state that we do through our association. And I had Trudy with me. And I've never trapped on this place before in my life. And so I had Trudy with me. I turned her out, and it was probably 80 to 100 acre horse pasture. There were no horses in it at the time. They had moved them up into another paddock on another section of the property. So I turned Trudy loose and she made a huge loop around the perimeter of that field, and she started kind of angling back toward me. She's in the middle of a wide open grazed down pasture, and she stops and she shows a ton of interest in one particular spot. I didn't call her back. I was just watching her. And she was so intent on this. And the guy I was with, Scott, who's also a listener of this show. Scott, I told Scott, I said, Scott, let's walk out here. There's something there. I'm not sure what it is. I have no idea. But there's something in this location, and coyotes are associated with this spot. And we walked out there, and we found a deer shoulder that had been chewed on by coyotes. There was coyote scat right there. This is all in a 3-foot area. There was coyote sign everywhere. I would have never, ever looked nor set a trap in the middle of this wide open field. I may have tried to find entry and exit routes that the coyotes were taking to that field, but I would have never dreamed. And the more I thought about it and looked and really examined that location, it was on a small, ever so slightly, but a little higher rise in that field, which goes hand in hand with what coyotes love. They love a little elevation change. The coyote had drug that bone to right there. You know, I can just envision a clear, cool night. That's where the coyote goes. He's probably communicating with his, you know, other pack mates and howling from there and chomping down on a free deer shoulder leg that he picked up, you know, whether it be roadkill or a wounded deer or whatever the case may be. That was just his environment. I would have never found that location without Trudy there, without a trapline dog there. So it's really, really cool, and to be able to find those locations. The last thing that to kind of circle around and catch up my note, and also as we're talking about setting, this is where you got to be, you know, pretty careful. I talked about the traps that we use with the live market game are a little bit easier. Be very, very cautious while you're setting. If you use a lot of the stock traps that on the inside, where you would put an inside lamination on the inside corners of your trap, a lot of manufacturers are super, super sharp right there. You can get some cuts, and you don't want to particularly start your dog off using those. You don't want to damage feet. Usually after the dog is caught a handful of times, a lot of times you'll still have a finger or two left to do counting on. Usually the dog associates that trap at that point in time. The one thing that I have found, I've heard Clint echo this with his Daisy dog too, I've gotten to where I set more and more and more snares, especially on complete total blind sets. Where I find those opportunities, I'll set them, and I have not seen anything that the dog has no defense toward that. There's not lure. I think my dog associates the lure that I use. I always leave my trap line off with Clint's lure. If I come back with, you know, on that same trap line for maybe some coyote cleanup a little later on the season, albeit a month, 2 months later, I think maybe the coyotes kind of associate that. So maybe I switch off to something else, but for a temporary thing. But I always lead off on Clint's, and I'm a firm believer that Trudy knows every single one of Clint's lures by name, probably, because she smells those over and over and over again. She remembers being caught in several of those traps. So we're not going to talk about the dangers of that as much as we are. What's kind of frustrating, and this is on your training side early on, you've got to set lured and baited, and you're going to go 50, 75, 100 yards down the way, and you're going to find the next location. Maybe the dog showed you that location. You want to set another one there. What you don't want, you spend all that time and effort at that last set. You don't want your dog to circle around there, even if it's not going to hurt her, and get caught up, and you got to go remake two sets instead of one. So you don't want your dog continually setting your traps off. And you will not, typically, my experience has been, once the dog learns what the trap is, learns what the lure smells like, learns that that can be danger, then typically you won't have those issues. But those were some early on issues. You know, I was trying to scout with her and then also set with her, and she would go back and almost destroy some of my earlier sets that I just made, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes ago. So that became much, much of a not more of a non-issue later on, the more training that she had and the more work we've got into there. And anymore, I don't really worry about it so much, except for the snares. A little bit with the blind sets too, because I'm still, a mafia set guy. I use that as one of my favorite go-tos. And I've caught her more often than not anymore. What few times I catch her now is it'll be a mafia set or a snare. They just don't have the defenses, or a complete total blind set. If it's a tight trail and I'm out of snares or something, I'll put footholds right in there and do an extremely good job, or try to blend those in where you can't tell anything is there. those are the only places that I'll catch my dog now, and I'll usually call her off. And I've kind of used that word danger anymore. When I say that, she knows what danger means now. And that took longer to train and to teach than anything else did along the way with that. So those are just a few things that kind of come to mind. Hopefully I hadn't bored you too much. I love running Trudy there. She enjoys this game as much as anything. It's about getting outside. It's about getting fresh air in your lungs. I don't care if you're a dog or you're a human. That's good for all of us, and it's a fun time. Guys, it's right around the corner when it starts. This is late August. It'll be September here in just a few days, and I cannot wait for this weather to change. I'm itching to go. I've already gotten a couple of batches of equipment out, cleaned them up, and getting things ready to go. Literally within the next 4 to 6 weeks, we'll be setting steel, and I am pumped up. I am so ready for it. Guys, if you're thinking about developing a trapline dog, I highly encourage you to. It's been an extremely worthwhile experience to me. I'm not going to say that Trudy doesn't argue with me sometimes, and usually she's right, but she's probably one of the best trapline partners I've ever had. And I think if you had one and developed your own, you would see the exact same thing. They're a joy to have around. I would advise if you're looking for breed, stay with kind of a mid-sized breed like we discussed. They're a lot easier. Like my Trudy dog rides in the cab of my little mini truck with me. That's what I trap out of, and that is her seat when I trap with other folks. My buddy Carl, he knows that when he sits there, he's sitting in a place that where my dog rides. So I've got Trudy kind of looks sideways at Carl when he gets in the cab of my mini truck, because that's her spot. So you couldn't do that with a great big dog, and so your smaller dog should be a little bit harder to be mobile enough as well. So hopefully we answered some questions there. I know maybe I kind of rambled a little bit. I apologize for that. If I can help you at all with that, if you have any questions, feel free to call me. I'm easy to find. Expandapantraps.com is my website. Look us up there. All my personal contact information is there. If you have any questions, I love talking to trappers, and I'll be more than happy to help you out. If we spark some interest there, maybe it's something that you want to pursue a little bit further. And I can even give you some names of some other folks I know that have trained some of these dogs and have even more experience than I do with them. So, guys, I appreciate so much you hanging out with me today. You guys are absolutely the best people on the planet. The North American Trapper they're my people. These are the kind of things that I like to talk about. These are the kind of people I like to hang out with. And I thank you so much for your tenderness over this last several minutes. As far as I know, Clint will be done with the shows for a little while, for a week or two anyway, after this New York show. If you're up there, go shake his hand, tell him you enjoy the show, meet him, maybe buy some of his lure and bait. And guys, Clint will be back in with you next week. Until then, this will be Chip signing out with you for Trapping Radio.
Down in the New York minute. If you catch horseshoe teeth, and that was all she wrote. So call up Trudy on the telephone. Send her a letter in the mail. Well, I'm hung up in Dallas. They won't let me out of this jail. If she asks you how I'm faring, well, I'm just about to lose my mind. Worried about old Johnny Lee Walker and the girl I left behind. I just got to town last Friday evening. Sure as hell didn't mean to stay. I was on my way back to Louisiana. Had a powerful thirst and 6 months of pay. I met a peroxide blonde in a bar on D-Bell. I was flying high and feeling mean. Poured down a bottle and a half of red eye. I dropped $35 in the slot machine, and the boys in the back was a dealing seven card. Sit down and won me 110. I was raking in chips like Grant took Richmond. The big John Lee called me strolling in. He red dogged the table like a 707. Pretty soon he done won all of my bread. I accused him of cheating. He reached for a pistol. I grabbed the chair and went upside of his head. And then I took off a running like a motorcycle. A wood, wood. Heard the bullets whining and the sirens wail. But it took half the cops in Dallas County just to put one coon ass boy in jail. So call up Trudy on the telephone. Send a letter in the mail. Well, I'm hung up in Dallas. If you ask you how I'm faring, yeah, I'm just about to lose my mind. Worried about